This is Wendy N. Wagner, writer and editor, and I'm here with Legends of Tabletop.
Hey, everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Hey, everybody. This is episode 56, I believe. I should have double-checked before I said that. Yeah, 56, so we're doing good. We're off to a roaring start. We're happy to have Wendy Wagner on with us tonight. She's going to be talking about her new novel, Star Spawn. Is it actually released yet, or are we still waiting for the kickoff date?
Yesterday.
See, we're right where we need to be.
Cool.
So thanks for coming on. How are you doing tonight?
Really great. Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. I have also with me Vince tonight.
Hello.
2 weeks in a row, so you guys should all feel pretty pretty special now.
Tremble.
Yeah. So we usually start off the show, if I don't forget, as we're doing this, a segment called Something Cool.
John.
Yes.
Stop.
Vince.
Stop. Stop moving. You're making me seasick.
Oh, am I? Whoa. So we have a something cool segment that we start. Wow, short. Okay. This is going to be a heavily edited episode, I suppose. Something cool that we start the show with. So do you have anything cool other than the release of your brand new novel yesterday?
Well, I got to say, I just devoured the new Joe Hill book, The Fireman, and I'm still kind of yeah, that book was so awesome. So that is my definite something cool, and if you haven't read it, you should walk out and get yourself a copy.
Cool. All right.
It kind of doubles as a workout, because it's a pretty big book. So you can just, do some crunches.
Uh-huh. Carry that around in a bag for a while.
Yeah.
Do some curls. Cool. What about you, Vince? You got anything cool going on this time?
No. Well, actually, yes. We have the Dwarven Forge 5e campaign coming up soon, so I'm in the midst of creating and putting together that. And that will be not this Saturday, but the following Saturday on the 20th. So tune in.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be our first foray into 5th edition, so it should be pretty cool.
Sounds cool.
Yep.
And we've got the Sarita Gaming Meetup coming this weekend, so I'm looking forward to at least potentially playing some new games this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably about it, I guess. I haven't killed anybody yet, so, I mean, that's always a plus.
At least not that you're going to admit online.
Yeah, well, I probably should edit that out, too.
Yeah, edit that out.
God damn it. Terrible.
Yeah.
All right. So, we'll jump right in. This is a train wreck as usual. So the book has some very Lovecraftian elements that are involved. When did you first find out about Lovecraft?
Actually, I was kind of late on the Lovecraft train. I'd never heard of him, and I live in Portland, Oregon, where we have the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. And so when the film festival first showed up, which was like 20 years ago, I guess, I would see the posters, and I was like, this looks cool. I have no idea what that's about. And after, 10 years of seeing cool movie posters, I was like, I finally need to learn what this is. So, maybe 10 years ago, I finally picked up a collection of Lovecraft stories. It's the one that's edited by Joyce Carol Oates. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, this is my jam. Why have I not been reading this all along? And I've been hooked ever since.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. Have you been to the film festival proper to sit and go through the movies or no?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really great. You know, they now have three locations. They do like a mini event in Rhode Island and then two like just films in Los Angeles, well, mostly just films, and then a big track with literary stuff here in Portland every year. So I try to go every year. I've been going for about, I don't know, 6 years now. Last year was my first year to actually get to be on panels. It was
cool. Do you have any plans to head out to Necronomicon?
I really, really, really want to make it out to Necronomicon. It's definitely the number one con I want to make it to. Well, okay, Gen Con I've heard of, too. But I really do need to make the pilgrimage out to Rhode Island and to get the vibe anyway.
Yeah, Vince has been a couple of times. My first time was last year over to Necronomicon. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, in 2013, and John and I were there for 2015.
Great.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they try to pick the weekend closest to Lovecraft's birthday, but next year they have it scheduled the same weekend as Gen Con, which...
Oh!
Yeah.
Actually, no one gives a shit about Gen Con.
Well, I would like to go, but...
I say facetiously.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to have to navigate for 4 days. have you done any other cons, either as a guest or, you know, as an author to, you know, go and sit at a table?
Yeah, I've gone to WorldCon a couple of times, and then I try to hit up some local conventions here, and I've done World Fantasy once, too. Oh, and World Horror a couple of times.
Cool. Very cool. So this is your second novel with Paizo.
Right.
How did that all come about? Let's start with that. How did that affiliation come about?
Well, let's rewind to imagine a very young, really nerdy kid that spent a lot of time reading. And that kid found the Dragonlance novels, right, when they first came out. And this kid thought it was, like, the coolest thing. And so my dream when I was about 11, 12, 13 was to be Margaret Weis. Like, I thought that would be the coolest thing that could ever happen. And so when I started doing writing, I published a couple of short stories, and I was noodling around on the Wizards of the Coast website, and I saw that you could apply to write tie-in fiction there. You just had to, like, send them, like, an application package. So I was like, I can make my childhood dreams come true. So I sent them this application package, and I was all really excited about it. And in the meantime, I have friends who get to travel a little more than I do, and they knew James Sutter, who at the time was handling, like, the web fiction for Pathfinder, and he also was doing, like, game dev and writing novels and stuff. And he did a blog post for this writing blog that we used to run called The Ink Punks, and it was about being a tie-in writer. And after I read it, I was like, oh, you know, I was talking to him on Twitter, and I said something about, I just think it's so cool that you write it tie-in. That's, like, always been a dream of mine. I just applied, you know, to do that at Wizards of the Coast. And he said, oh, would you possibly consider doing that for Pathfinder? And I was like, well, I don't know anything about Pathfinder, but they say it's a lot like Dungeons & Dragons, so sure. So I sent him some stuff. And he really liked it, so he asked me to write a story for the web fiction line. And I wrote a story, and we had a great time working together editing it. And after we got done, he said, you know, I think you'd be a good fit to write a novel for us. So he brought me on to write the first Jandara novel. It was really great.
Cool.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Huge echo. Is that you, Vince? Did you do something? Oh, there it goes. It went away. All right, so let's start over. We'll edit, and then, okay, we'll go again. So when they ask you to write, how much input do they have to say, oh, we want you to write a novel, but we're looking for X, or do you just come back and say, hey, I've got a really cool idea, this is what I want to write, and I'm going to do it?
It's a little bit of the second one. you have no idea what they're looking for, and they say, well, just send us some ideas. So, you know, you send them like 7 or 8 ideas, and they go through and they say, well, no, Tim Pratt's writing something that's too close to that, or no, we did that before. No, we're going to do that in 3 years. This could be okay, but maybe you should do this. And so once you get to that phase, there's a real feeling of collaboration in, like, I come up with the ideas, but then they make sure it's actually going to work with the game, and then it's not going to mess up anybody else's project. Like, I can't go blow up any, you know, cities that were, or anything like that. So we kind of do like a series of more and more in-depth outlines that are reviewed by not just my editor, but, you know, the gaming devs and things like that. So that's, you know, there's a lot of tweaking and playing around at that phase. And then once the book is approved, then they just turn me loose and I can stay pretty close to my outline. And sometimes they'll be like, actually, totally revising, but in my first book, it had these Skinwalker characters, and they warned me. They're like, we're actually going to stat up Skinwalkers, so we may have to go through and, like, change your book a little. Don't worry about it. You can do it. I thought that then, like, when you revise, then sometimes you have to kind of, like, do a little more tinkering, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to try to make it fit into the, you know, to the mechanics of the game, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, if you know, oh, the Skinwalkers can do X, Y, Z, and they're like, no, it's not in the stat block. They can't do that.
Yeah. I was really lucky because, like, Skinwalkers had never been really statted up before. So, you know, they knew what I was going to do. So that kind of helped inform, like, some of the projects they were working on. I felt really giddy about that.
So you have almost a game designer credit too. That's really cool. Once you got everything all ready to go, you start writing the book. You know, everything kind of for the most part takes place on the island in the city. Did you sort of sketch out how the city was laid out for, like, continuity purposes, as you know, for yourself as you're going through? Because I thought about doing it as I was reading it, and I'm like, I'm just going to trust that this is all going to work out.
Yeah, I was sort of like drawing a map as I went of the island, which, you know, it has a lot of layers. And so, like, keeping track, like, sometimes I just stop and be like, oh my gosh, what would be underneath this room if the floor collapses? It was slightly more exciting art stuff than my brain usually has to work with.
That's fair.
Yeah, it was really fun with my first book. They were like, yeah, so when you turn the book, can you draw us a map? I was like, I gotta draw a map? They're like, yeah, you know, you made up a lot of islands, so please put them in there. And I was like, I gotta draw a map! And then it's, like, pretty, and it's really cool.
So editor, cartographer, game designer.
What can I say? You gotta wear a lot of hats in this world.
Sweet. I'm going to dovetail or ride the coattails of one of John's questions. When you're sitting down to do your creative process, are you you have a story beat or an outline, a general outline that you follow, or do you pants it, or is it a mixture of both?
Well, when working for Pathfinder, I have to go from a very strict outline. I mean, it's beat for beat. But on my own work, I tend to start with sort of a more general outline, and I'll, like, write a little bit, tweak my outline, write a little bit, tweak my outline, okay, that kind of thing. I usually get started just kind of having a kind of a general sense of the 3-act structure, like the most important things. You know, I like to have my candy bar scenes in mind and have a general sense of, like, where it's going to end. Although, mm-hmm, actually, the most recent book I worked, I really had no idea how it was going to end. But I like to know a little bit before I get started, but I am constantly tweaking.
Okay.
Cool. So, I'm going back and forth between two screens here. So, Sandy Peterson, wow, so much editing. Sandy Peterson put out his Kickstarter for Pathfinder, for the Mythos creatures and stuff. Was there any sort of synergy between what Sandy was doing and what you were doing as far as subject matter for the book? Or like, hey, we have this Kickstarter thing that's not really Paizo, but for Paizo. And
I have no idea if Pathfinder and Sandy work together at all. I definitely didn't, you know, hear anything from him. Still haven't met Sandy yet. even with the lifelong goal, because I love Call of Cthulhu. It's like the best role-playing game ever. I mean, second best role-playing game ever.
Well, I think, what is it, Geek and Sundry did the top 100 or something, and I think it was number one, so I think you're safe to say that.
Number one.
So this year, Pathfinder has what they call an adventure path, which are kind of like gaming modules that they have come out, and it's the Strange Aeons adventure path, and it's all Lovecraftian stuff. So, kind of what I'm dealing, a lot of it is coming from, is going to appear, I think, in the Strange Aeons kind of stuff. Actually, I worked a lot from a previous adventure they had about the Dark Tapestry, and then, like, some other stuff that they'd already produced about the Plateau of Lang and things like that. So they definitely have, I mean, almost everybody at Pathfinder is a giant Lovecraft nerd. So, I mean, they've always included, like, they're, like, really gung-ho about using Lovecraftian elements in their own games, I think. So, they had a lot of material for me to draw on. It was really, really made my job easy.
Hey, that's what you want.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, since I didn't get a review up before you came on, for which I heartily apologize, you want to give us, like, the quick Cliff Notes version of, without any spoilers, what's Starspawn about?
Well, Starspawn, you've got this nice family. They're trying to make their living as friendly traders, even though, you know, one of them's background is that kind of nasty pirate in the past. And they're very hard up for cash. And they discover this island that has risen out of the sea. And it appears to be covered by a city that's, like, you know, has golden spires and these amazing statues that even, like, if you're just looking with, like, your spyglass, you can see it's just covered in winking, wondrous things that you can sell for cash. So they're like, let's go get some treasure. This is great. But when they get to the island, they discover some other creatures have already discovered it, including a murderous cult of, you know, I guess you'd call them deep ones. And they get on the wrong side of all these other creatures that have their own agenda for this island. And their quest for money is foiled by monsters, basically.
Stupid.
I hate when that happens.
It's kind of like everybody's day job, right?
It's the exact opposite of what would happen if you were actually playing this as an adventure. So you kill all the monsters and take all the stuff.
Right. In this case, it was more like, you know, get your butt kicked a lot by monsters and manage to lose a lot of the treasure.
Yeah.
Kind of like if it was my real life and I went treasure hunting.
Right. It was an easy read. It was fun. You know, a lot of things going on. It did some things that I didn't expect character wise. I'll be vague. which was, you know, refreshing. You know, you read Star Wars novels and, you know, everybody's always in every novel. Nothing ever happens. So we'll say it that way and let people leave to interpret.
Yes.
So that's cool. So will there be a third novel in the works to continue Gendra's story, or is it just a two-book series, or how's that going to work?
If Pathfinder asked for another Gendra novel, I would totally write them another Gendra novel. I haven't heard anything from them, so, and I know they're kind of, like, looking at more famous writers now. Like, I feel like I kind of got lucky and, like, you know, got in at the moment when we were like, oh, you seem talented. We don't care if you're nobody. And now they're kind of like, oh, we need somebody who's like a best-selling writer. So, I don't know. Let's see. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. That's cool. So you seriously started writing somewhere in 2008. What was your normal job before that?
I used to work at the Portland Children's Museum. I was like the most of my jobs there. I did a lot of different fun things. I mostly worked at the box office, so like, you know, I sold you tickets when you walk in the front door. But I also got to do fun things like work in the clay studio and like the junk studio. So I got to teach kids like how to use a drill. Yeah. I taught yoga class for them for a little while. I got to do birthday parties. I was like the lady that like helped you do art projects at your birthday party.
That's good. You must have the patience of a saint then.
I don't know about that, but I do have, I think, a good sense of humor, and I like to have fun. So
always a plus when you're working with kids.
Yeah, it was always pretty great. Like, I'd be like, I'd do my day job stuff, and then, you know, I'd go to like World Horror and be like, and here is my story about horrible bloodthirsty things. And everybody there is like, yeah, we're really super and nice in our day jobs too.
Did you always sort of write on the side? I mean, have you always had that sort of, you know, creative bug or?
Yeah, you know, I started writing my first novel when I was about 7 or 8. It was basically Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, just like retold by me. So, you know, I always wanted to be a writer, and I always assumed I would write fantasy and science fiction. When I went to college, I kind of started feeling like, you know, in the 90s, like it wasn't that cool to be a nerd. And so I took like literature and serious creative writing classes there, and I was like, oh, maybe writing books about monsters and swords and stuff isn't what I should be doing. So then I didn't write for like 10 years. And then one day I had just read On Writing by Stephen King, which is basically like a big permission note that says, you can do it! Rah, rah, rah!
Right.
Write whatever weird stuff you want to write. And so that was actually like 2003, and I wrote my first novel. And it sort of went through, you know, first noveling, you know, ridiculousness for a long time. And then in 2008, I was like, I'm going to try to write some short stories and really learn how to do this.
Echo again. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Now it stopped again.
It's definitely you.
It's got to be. I don't know why. I'm not even sitting that close to the computer. I don't know. Maybe I'll move my phone. Maybe it's bouncing out of the phone.
Lift your left leg.
Hold on. Wait a minute. That's my right leg. Oh, sorry. Forget it.
Just feel like that.
Oh, my God. I hit the mic. Oh, my God. Are you guys still there?
Yeah. Don't touch the headset. Just stop moving around.
Okay. I'm just going to sit like this.
Yeah, don't touch anything.
All right. So take the next one, Vince.
Oh, my God.
we're going to fix this in post.
No, we're not. Let's delve into gaming a little bit, shall we?
All right.
You get to play often, or is your writing kind of first and foremost, and then gaming is kind of like your dessert?
Well, you know, we play, I play with my brother, my husband, and my daughter just about every weekend. Okay. For the last 2 years, we've been playing Call of Cthulhu. Before that, we were playing Pathfinder. So, we miss sometimes on weekends. You know, whoever is the GM will be tired, and they'll be like, oh, I can't be smart enough. But almost every weekend, we get a little done.
Okay. That's cool.
We do a lot of board gaming, too.
Oh, okay. Do you have a favorite board game?
Right now, we're, like, really obsessed with the Legendary Encounters Aliens game.
Oh.
It's so fun. It's just, like, it's like a deck builder, and it's kind of great because they set it up so you can basically play through each of the four movies. So I came in like a different kind of packet of like cards with like different, you know, special skills and things based on around like the plot of each movie. It's a blast.
Cool. Game over, man. Game over.
Totally. There is a card that says that.
I like it. I have to get it just for that.
Yeah.
Have you ever actually won that game? Because I work with a guy who had that one and a couple of the other games as well. And he said, I think he said he won once, maybe.
Yeah, we've won like six times and we've won once, I think. Oh, actually, we won twice. We just barely won the last time. But it's brutal. It's
you can come more.
Yeah.
You definitely want to nuke it from orbit sometimes.
I think you can mix and match those too, right? So have you done like superheroes with aliens?
We don't have any of the other games yet, but like the gaming mechanic for the game is like so enjoyable that I imagine we'll probably pick them up. Because, you know, that'd be kind of fun to be the Avengers up against aliens or something.
Yeah. I'd imagine they probably have the cards balanced across all the sets because I know they're compatible.
Yeah.
At least from what he was telling me.
It seems like very clever design.
Cool. Do you have, so we'll go back to writing real quick. Do you have a certain process? Do you get like a cup of tea, you know, close the blinds, close the doors? Do you have a certain kind of scenario that you go through when you're writing?
I used to not have much of a routine at all before I started working as an editor, but now I kind of find I need to kind of like divide my time very thoughtfully, or else it's just really easy to get sucked into stuff about running the magazine. So I try to spend an hour or two in the morning at my desk, or sometimes I just cave and write longhand at the kitchen table. so it's like I get my, mostly during the school year, it's like I get my daughter off to school and then I make a cup of coffee and then I go to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good. I was talking to Charles DeLint a couple of years ago. I met him at a book festival thing. So I asked him the same thing, and he's like, "Nah, I just write. Nah, I do whatever." And I'm like, "Okay, that's not what I would think, but okay." You just kind of expect like it's a whole ritual and a routine to kind of like focus yourself and kind of get in and you know kind of get those juices flowing.
Yeah, I know a lot of people swear by having, like, a little routine to just, like, turn your brain into, like, okay, creative mode. To help, like, focus and get rid of distractions. And, yeah, I definitely feel like it's hard for me to do anything unless I have made that cup of coffee.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's for sure.
The weird thing, like, I actually, like, had to cut way back on caffeine, so now it's just, like, decaf. But it doesn't matter.
Well, I don't know if I could do that. I told my – we got a new supervisor at work, apropos of nothing really. But he told us that we couldn't have, you know, food or drink in the – you know, in our laboratory area. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. I said, then I'm going to sit in the kitchen for a half an hour in the morning every morning and have coffee. Otherwise, none of us is going to make it out of here. So we're trying to work that out. we'll stay on writing since Vince is indisposed for the moment. Self-publishing has come, leaps and bounds in the last, 10 years or so. Accessible to pretty much everybody. I mean, my kids got like three different Wattpad accounts and, how we're doing this. So like, just anybody can do it. Do you think that's good for writing, bad for writing? I mean, does it set the bar too low, too high? It changes the way traditional publishing has to function, I would think.
Yeah. I think it can be – self-publishing can work great and can come up with, like, some really good product. For people who are willing to take it seriously and do the work to make sure that their book is well written and well edited and, but they're putting together something that's great. I have a friend right now, and he decided he was going to self-publish a series of superhero novels, and he's been working his butt off. You know, he hired an editor, and they went through all these steps, and just getting through, like, the first book was a lot of work for him, and now he's finally at a position where he feels like it's a great product, and he can design a cover and things like that. I do think not everybody is putting that level of care into what they're producing.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times, you know, your self-published works are a little bit hit or miss. I, for one, am not like, I'm not very clever at marketing. I'm not very good at proofreading. You know, there are lots of things that I would like somebody else to handle for me. So maybe someday I would give it a go, but I think I'd have to learn an awful lot before I could really make it work.
Yeah, you definitely need an editor. I mean, as many times as you read it, you know, when it's your own, sometimes it's just really hard to, you always need another set of eyes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can stick with the writing since it seems to be interesting. Do you have, I knew we had these. All right. Balancing your let's say your 9-to-5 life versus your writing, do you find that difficult, or do you have like a set time every day that you, all right, I'm going to sit down and from 8 in the morning, if you're a morning person, 8 in the morning till noon, I'm just going to write, no one bother me, or are you a night person, or is it just, do things come to you during the day and you let them percolate and then you sit down for like maybe 20 minutes and then real fast you get that out and then you go about your business and then?
I don't have a regular day job anymore. My position got cut. Children's museum, no more cute kids for me. So I now am just freelancing with, you know, mostly I do editorial stuff at like Speed and Nightmare magazine. Sometimes I pick up some spare copy editing on the side. I actually have like a little stack of like Paizo products I've done some copy editing on. And it's definitely easier during the school year because when my daughter is home, it's like chaos. But so basically I have it worked out where in the morning I do my own writing and then after lunch I spend some time doing editorial work, you know, like the actual stuff that makes money. And sometimes I can't get that all done in the afternoon before, like, you know, hubby and kid comes home. So then sometimes I have to do that kind of work at nighttime. I don't really write very well at night. I tend to be really kind of dumb. But at the same time, sometimes I'll come up with good ideas. So I do try once every 2 weeks, I like to spend some time just with, like, my notebook in the nighttime and just, like, you know, do brainstorming. One of the things I really like to do at night is if I'm working on a project, I like to find other projects that have sort of the same, like, tone or somehow seem like they could be related. And then I like to watch like a movie or something and then like make notes and kind of brainstorm as I'm watching it. So I try to do things like that at nighttime, like where I have less attention span for like making beautiful sentences and just like try to get the synapses firing.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
When you're playing, you know, D&D or Call of Cthulhu or anything, do you have any dice rituals or taboos, like don't let people touch your dice or, you know, have to, you know, roll them out to see if you roll any ones out right away or anything like that?
I don't really, but I definitely have, like, gotten kind of to be sort of a snob where I have, like, my Call of Cthulhu dice, which are like those Cthulhu dice with, like, you know, the tentacles and stars and stuff. And, like, I cannot play that game with my normal dice. No way! So, and they can't touch, you know. They're the separate bag, and they cannot mix. That would be wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dice are really cool, but they're not for Call of Cthulhu.
That makes sense. Do you find yourself just, like, picking up dice randomly, like if you're out like at a bookstore, you're like, oh, those look cool. I sure could use another set of dice.
I really try not to because, like, you know, I'm a freelance writer and editor. I don't have a lot of spare cash. But I did do something kind of terrible the other day. I was like, you know, I'm having a big reading event next weekend. I wanted to be able to do a little silly stuff with people. And I was like, I'm going to pick up some dice, and I can give each person a die, and we're going to do like kind of some gaming-related stuff. And I was looking at the ChessX catalog.
Oh, yeah. That's a mistake.
Dangerous stuff, people. Oh, that's a rabbit hole you don't want to go down. Unfortunately, the dice that perfectly match the cover of Starspawn are out of print. So I had to get these kind of purpley pinky ones that almost perfectly match, but they're not all swirly and neato like the other ones.
Mm-hmm. There you go. If you like ChessX, you can also check out Easy Dice Roller Company. They're a smaller company. Their selection's not as large, but super responsive and a bunch of nice guys. We give them a little plug. Cha-ching.
Nice work.
Do you remember your first publication?
Yes. It was... So before I felt very confident about my work, and hadn't really entered the world of, oh my gosh, you only submit to things that pay you money. I sent a short story to a website called the Abacot Journal, which is not like doing stuff anymore. And I sent them a story called The Kitchen Witch. And it was about an old lady who had her husband's skull up on the mantle, and she could talk to him. And she was baking a peach pie, and I believe Jesus showed up on her door, and he was going to bring the end of the world, and she dropped the peach pie on his head because she didn't think that it was okay to end the world. Yeah, I've come a long way.
Hey, baby steps.
Right.
Cool. Any advice for a new writer or someone thinking about taking the plunge into writing?
Sure. You know, everybody will give you, there's so much advice out there, like so much advice. And you can spend probably 3 solid years just reading advice. And, you know, I would definitely say read some of the big, you know, really noteworthy books on the subject. If you're working on genre fiction, read On Writing. If you're gonna read, maybe Ursula K. Le Guin has a great book. I think it's called Steering the Craft. It's got some writing exercises. Orson Scott Card has some really great book. Nancy Crest does too. You know, just read a handful of the big ones, and then turn off the internet. Like, don't go to all those blog sites and they tell you what to do. The only thing you really do keep active is William Shun has a great, you know, series about like how to format a manuscript. And just stop reading advice and do some writing. Like, I'd say there will come a point in time where you will chew off your own foot reading advice, and you will go the wrong direction, and you'll kick yourself for a long time. Because you just have to find your own way, you know. Some other things you can do if you want to improve faster. If you're interested in short fiction at all, I would recommend volunteering at an online magazine to read Slush. Once you've read 200 short stories of varying quality, you will suddenly like have some epiphanies about what can make a story work and what can make it not work. If you think that sounds terrible and you've got $6,000 in your pocket, you could go to Clarion West or Clarion Original. It's 6 weeks and it's expensive, but it does seem to teach people a lot. I did not go to that, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I can't imagine living with a bunch of writers for 6 weeks. I'd probably rather like gouge out my own eyes. But you know, there are a lot of great workshops out there. Even your local convention, most local science fiction conventions also have like very affordable writing workshops where you can like meet up with some people who are working in the field and they can give you feedback. Just doing little things like that can really help take your writing up to the next level.
Cool. Do you have anything you want to get off your chest about Mike Davis? Don't worry, we won't tell him. But if there's anything,
oh man, I love
Mike. If you're watching, we love you.
Really a terrific guy. I got really lucky a couple of years ago. He actually made it out to Portland for HP Lovecraft Film Festival, and it was like so great to meet him. It was like so fun. And
can you just tweet me that question?
What's that?
John, can you just tweet you that question?
No, I figured you know, Mike sent Wendy over our way, so I figured I'd just break his balls a little bit.
Yeah, I thought maybe he was tuning in. He does that sometimes. He sometimes sandbags in on our stuff.
Yeah.
Something
he'd do. Yeah. The first time I met Mike was at Necronomicon last year, so he and Vince have been friends for a while.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. He does great work over there at the Lovecraft E-Zine. You know, definitely give him a plug. You know, he does a weekly show on Sundays, so, you know, everything Lovecraftiana, so people should go check that out over there. LovecraftEZine.com. Yep, definitely.
It's LovecraftZine.com.
Oh, yeah, LovecraftZine. Right. I don't know, it's bookmarked. I don't ever look at the
Yeah, I have two of their T-shirts and a subscription, so I'm a huge fan.
Nice. So to sort of kind of deviate from sort of what we've been talking about, a more social, political level, not to get too deep into it, but so being a female writer, do you find that it's either harder to publish? Do you feel like you know, there's certain inroads that still need to be made? Is it, you know, as a female writer, how do you feel about that whole situation? I know Mike's done some things, and there's, you know, some you know, collections of female weird fiction things that are coming out, you know, either through Mike or, you know, affiliations and stuff. So, well, what's been your experience?
Well, on a personal level, I haven't experienced a lot of difficulty breaking into genre fiction. I do find, like, when I'm at panels, I do feel like sometimes I get talked over. and you know, maybe that's just because a lot of the guys in this genre are just, like, big talkers, you know? Maybe I'm too sensitive. I didn't really think much about it at all until a couple years ago. Lightspeed did a special project called Women Destroy Science Fiction, which was an all-women science fiction collection. It had original fiction, reprint fiction, and then my job, I did all the nonfiction. I organized that. But I got to collect personal essays from gals who are working in the field about what it was like to be a writer or what it was like to be, like, at conventions and things like that. And we got, like, all these crazy stories coming in about, you know, people who are well-respected and established in the field who've always written science fiction, and then as the years go by, they get referred to as fantasy writers because, you know, women write fantasy. They don't write science fiction. Or, you know, just you start to see that there's a real trend in genre fiction where, like, a lady will put out a book, and it somehow, you know, it might make a list that year, but then it somehow falls off the list of, like, best works. And in general, just like when you see recommended fiction lists, they're obscenely dominated by male writers. And, you know, if you look at the awards, you're seeing, like, oh, you know, this book by this lady won a Nebula, this book by this woman won a Hugo, this book won a Bram Stoker Award. So it's not as if women aren't writing great things in genre fiction. It's just somehow our culture has a way of forgetting about them very quickly. So that, it makes me more nervous. Breaking in hasn't been a problem, but the idea, like, will I be able to stick around? Like, am I just going to be forgotten? It makes me worried.
Okay. So it's interesting to get that perspective. You know, for me as a gamer, maybe for, I won't speak for Vince. You know, for the most part, my groups have all been, you know, males. You know, I'll read cross whatever, but I tend to read, you know, more male authors. I guess maybe just because that's you know, my perspective. So it's interesting then to sort of, you know, get that other viewpoint, you know, from someone who's doing it as opposed to someone who's just, you know, walking into the store and grabbing a book off the shelf and say, oh, well, that looks good. I'll, you know, take that home and check it out, you know.
Yeah.
So, cool. And have you had a similar experience with gaming at all?
You know,
as far as inclusion and stuff like that?
I only really game with, like, close friends and family. I have never done any gaming at conventions. So I have kind of, like, not really experienced much of the social side of gaming.
Sure, sure. Okay. And have you been gaming for a long time, or, you know, as far as, like, RPG stuff, or when did you first get into it?
I only started getting into RPGs, actually, when I started writing for Pathfinder, because when I was a kid, I wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons so much, but, you know, I lived in a town of, like, 60 people. I was only a kid in my grade. There was...
Wow.
You know, there were plenty of kids in the 80s that their parents were like, Dungeons and Dragons, that's the devil's work. So there was nobody for me to play with. I actually would, like, make up my own little games. Like, I'd read, like, the little, my sister had given me, like, the red book, and I had, like, a little bestiary, and I would read it, and then I would kind of make up my own games with, like, you know, a die, and I had this one game where I used jacks. Somehow, like, that was something with battling with, like, throwing the ball and catching the jacks, and certain colors meant certain wins with certain spells, and, yeah, in my head, I was always a gamer, but I didn't really start playing it until pretty recently.
Okay, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm glad to have you as part of the community. It's such a fun, social, you know, just... You know, an escape, you know, the social aspect. I mean, it's just, it's great on so many levels.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
My brother is this huge gaming nerd. I mean, he was playing Mechton when he was, like, you know, 11. And so it was, like, his dream to, like, suck me into that world. He's like 10 years younger than me. So when he got out of the Navy and he settled in Portland, he was like, we will game! Been gaming ever since.
That's why he was lucky. I tried to get my daughter to play, and she's been really hesitant to play. And then she kind of texted me and was like, well, you know, how do you make a character and this and that? And I got all excited, and then it's still been like 2 or 3 months. And like, are we going to do this? Like, here's the books. We'll, you know, we'll find some people, you know. So we're still kind of like, she's board gaming a little bit now because I've been getting into more of that, you know, especially, you know, because of the podcast, we get stuff to review and, you know, we have the gaming meetup. So it's been an interesting ride for me as of late to kind of delve into that aspect of it because I'm more of an RPG gamer myself. So it's like learning a whole new lingo. And
my husband loves board games. Like, he just... loves them. We have, you know, 100 plus out in the garage. And my daughter, she's 13. She's really, like, not into the board games very much. There are a couple. She likes Arkham Horror. She likes the alien game, stuff like that. But she loves role play. Like, she could do that every day, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. You got to get them while they're young.
That's right.
Cool. Do you have anything else that you want to plug? You will give the, you know, give the. I have stuff in the show notes, but if you want to talk about other stuff that you're doing, other projects you have going on.
Oh gosh, I'm pretty easy. You know, I'm just like so absorbed right now in the launch of Starspawn. It's kind of hard to remember that I have other projects. I'll just be excited for Starspawn, and I mean, I do have another book coming out next year, but there's plenty of time to worry about that then.
Okay, that's fair, that's fair. If you want to come on and talk about that, we can certainly have you on again for that.
That'd be fun. It's not gaming related, though.
Well, we could probably shoehorn you in.
Yeah!
That's cool. Vince, you have any other questions?
I think it pretty much sums it up nicely. I think covered everything. Is there anything else you would like to plug at all?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't even have any short stories coming out for a while, so.
Okay.
All right. Well, we can roll into our final five questions here. I'm going to go back and forth. We have two separate lists because we have people been on more than once. We've had to come up with more questions. So I'll give you the first one. Book or Kindle?
Book.
Yeah, I kind of figured. Me too. Yeah. Always a book. I'm not for the e-readers and stuff.
I do have a Kindle, and I often read submissions on it. So because of that, I kind of just think about work when I pick up my Kindle. Like, I don't want to read anything on here.
All right. Star Trek or Star Wars?
Probably Star Wars.
Yeah?
I'm just naturally violent. What can I say?
I would have guessed you for Star Trek, so what do I know? tabletop or video games?
Tabletop.
Okay. Sci-fi or fantasy?
Sci-fi.
Okay. And if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I think I'm really gung-ho about telekinesis right now. I mean, maybe that's because I've only seen, like, the first two episodes of Stranger Things, and that girl, like, slamming the door is, like, still, like, really, like, in my head. But I don't know. I think it'd be pretty handy. You know, I could get a cup of coffee without getting up.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty great superpower.
That's not bad. You water the plants, take the garbage out.
I know, right?
I would be 1,000 pounds.
Me too.
It's a good thing I have to do stuff, or else I probably would be. I'm not going to the gym anymore.
You slacker.
Yeah, well, we're busy.
All right, that's everybody's excuse.
Yeah, well, you know. All right, I don't have anything else. You ripped right through the final five. I guess we're about done here. We have all of your contact details in the show notes, so everybody should go check those out and check out Starspawn. Hey, you could go to the legendsoftabletop.com and use our Amazon affiliate link to go ahead and order Starspawn. Just type it in a little search box there. That would be fantastic for everybody.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
You feel good and warm and fuzzy because you bought the book, support the writing, and you support Legends of Tabletop. So go do that.
And actually, you can order Skinwalkers, too. You can get them together, and you probably get free shipping.
There you go. And you get it as a gift thing you give to your friends.
Mm-hmm. They'll wrap it for you. They may put a little bow on it. I don't know.
Well, let's not go nuts now. Come on. It's Amazon. It's not, God.
I've never used their gift service. I could put a bow on it. I don't know.
Maybe. Stop moving your chair, for crying out loud.
I like it. I have a lot of nervous energy. I can't help it.
God damn it.
Yeah, well.
you're getting your workout on that chair.
Well, I shouldn't have had that enormous cup of delicious Bird's coffee before the interview.
Here we go with another, okay, yeah.
Hey, you got to get those in there. Cha-ching! That's awesome.
He could send some out my way so I can try it.
Support your small businesses. You have to order. I have an order on the way. Two bags.
Well, you send me a bag.
No, that shit's expensive. That's my coffee. It's not that expensive.
Yeah, you kind of ruined it, John. What the?
Oh, well. All right, well, this is degenerating quickly.
You both drink coffee. What's your favorite blend? I mean, so do I, but what's your favorite blend? Do you do the cream, the sugar, do you light, blonde, heavy, rainforest kind of crap?
Black, huh?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's decaf. That's terrible. Two terrible things together.
Wait, decaf? What?
Yeah, it's like my shameful secret. I had to cut back on caffeine.
Oh, okay.
But I've been drinking coffee since I was about 8 years old. So
wow.
How did that happen?
Drinking. My parents are clearly negligent and wanted me to be very short.
It stunted my growth.
But it gave you a lot of energy.
Right.
Yeah. When did you start drinking coffee, John? Like today?
Shit, I don't know. I'm old, so it's got to be a long time ago now.
Probably.
I don't know.
And you're doing coffee. You're doing coffee the proper way that I showed you with the French press.
French press, yeah. I've been pressing now for like 2 years, year and a half.
Those are the only presses you're doing.
It is. That's true. Sadly, it's true.
Cool.
All right. Let's. We're gonna cut it. That's it. We're gonna wrap this up.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. You guys are a blast.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you on and talk to you about your new novel. Thank you for sending it out for us to check it out. It was a very enjoyable read, and I swear I'm going to get a review up on the website.
We'll both have reviews up on both our site and Amazon for you.
Yay, exciting!
Amazon too? Yep. Absolutely. All right, I'll give out all of our contact stuff here like I always do. Check out the website. It's Legends of Tabletop Stop. We're going to edit. Oh, my God.
Edit that out.
Go to the website. It's legendsoftabletop.com. And don't forget, you can use that Amazon link to buy Starspawn and Skinwalkers together, the gift package. We talked about all this already. Yeah, if you have any questions, comments, feedback, you can reach out to us at legendsoftabletop@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, Instagram. I set up a Twitch channel, which we haven't used yet. I have to figure out the logistics of all that, so maybe you'll see us on Twitch next time. If you could leave us a rate us, review us on iTunes, that's tremendously helpful. We would appreciate that very much.
Perfect. If we're on Twitch, you keep friggin' moving.
Yeah. I don't see how the two things are related, but okay.
You're like a squirrel.
Oh, Twitch, I get it now. I got it.
Oh!
It's a little slow.
Even with all that coffee, a little slow on the uptake.
I know. Well, at least I'm not twitchy up here. It's all down here.
It's all below the waist where, thankfully and mercifully, we cannot see it.
That's true. That is definitely true. Yep. So we want to thank everybody for checking it out. We hope you enjoy it. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your neighbor. We'll take all the help we can get. So thanks for checking it out.
Give us a review. I said this before. Go on iTunes and leave a review.
Please leave us a review.
Just do it. You know you want to.
Hey, next week. We'll lead out with this. We're going to have a players roundtable discussion. I believe that's going to be on the 17th. I'll bring up the calendar real quick. Fix this in post. So we're going to have a players roundtable discussion on the 17th. We have Shane Ivey of Delta Green fame coming on the 23rd, so you don't want to miss that. We have David Krennan, the GM for both Crit Juice and Never Tell Me the Odds podcast, coming on the 31st, so that should be a lot of fun. Those guys are definitely a lot of fun to listen to, so we're looking forward to that as well. And the schedule rolls through to September. Go ahead and check out the website. The calendar's on there, and we hope you tune in for those, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.